The seed catalogs have already started arriving, and you may already be planning next year's garden. This hour, we'll have some ideas for gardeners who are looking for something special to plant next spring. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. All America Selections has released its list of winners for 2015. I'll talk about the AAS winners with Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Geron. And Denny and Richard will answer your questions. Email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or call 866-780-9100. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And almost as soon as the harvest is over, gardeners and growers are dreaming and planning for the next growing season. One of the things a lot of gardeners look forward to is the list of all America Selections winners, and the list for 2015 is out. This hour, we will talk about the winners. Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock is here. Hello, Denny.
Good morning, Charity. Good to be here.
Thank you so much for being here. And Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Geron is here. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And tell me a little bit about this organization, All America Selections. Denny?
All right. Well, the All America Selections organization is a longtime organization. It actually started back in the 30s, so it's been around for about 80 years. It was established by the seed trade, basically, to, in one way, promote their product. But it is an independent nonprofit, so none of the products that get the awards have been, you know, paid for by the seed company that introduces them, other than that they supply the seeds to the trial gardens. There are 62 trial gardens throughout U.S. and Canada that test these various new introductions from the seed companies. And here in Iowa, Ryman Gardens here on the ISU campus is one of those 62. It's the only one in Iowa, as you might guess, with just 62 throughout all of U.S. and Canada. There are not a lot of them throughout Iowa, but there are those they have to go through a certification process. The judges that rate these various vegetables and flowers need to go through some training. They have to be well established at their organization, and they usually don't allow just volunteers, although master gardeners may be involved in the project, but there usually needs to be a paid employee that is responsible for the overall project to make sure everything gets planted on time, that the data gets collected properly and reported then back to the organization, which tallies the scores from all over the U.S. And they'll come up with national winners. And new this year, they also announced some regional winners. So there were a few that perhaps didn't perform well, say, in California, but might have done well here in the Midwest. So there are some regional winners in addition to the national ones.
And are the regional winners, is that a new thing?
The regional winners is a new thing. This year is the first year they've done that regional winner.
That seems like a natural. So that sounds like a good step.
Yes. You know, you can be pretty sure if it's a national winner that it's going to produce well most anywhere you plant it. But you might really want to focus in on some of those regional winners, because we know that's adapted to the locality here. So particularly when we know that one of the gardens is at Ryman Gardens, that speaks really well. If it did well at Ryman Gardens, it's probably going to do well in central Iowa.
Right. Now, the list of winners, as I'm looking through it, I see such an incredible variety of plants and vegetables. What is the purview? What's being judged?
Well, the products that are being judged really depend on the seed companies or breeders and what they have to offer new to the public in the coming year. So some years there may be a lot of one particular type of vegetable or flower. Some years there are no flower winners, or some years there are no vegetable winners, because it's just going through a cycle where the breeders don't have anything new coming through the pipeline. You may have noticed one thing that I really noted this year was the preponderance of peppers. I get a little alliteration going there. there are three national winners on peppers and two regional winners that would perform well here in the Midwest. So, and I guess that's perhaps a reflection that peppers have become much more popular with the general public in the last decade or so. So breeders are trying to get some new varieties out there to spice some interest in that product.
Now, there are a couple. You mentioned the regional winner notations are new. That began for 2014, and so that's still there for 2015. There's another new category that is flowers from cutting. Can you tell me about that?
Yes. Typically, or the history of All America Selections has been from the seed companies. But now this year, they also have a couple winners from vegetative cuttings. And I think a reason that that's happening is that a lot more of the flowers that homeowners see in the garden center in the springtime do come from vegetative cuttings rather than from seed. A reason for that is with seed, there's usually some variability, even if it's hybrid, so that you got the same mix going in every year.
Right.
There's a little bit more variability than those that are taken by vegetative cuttings. And so the two vegetative cutting winners this year are also pretty exciting, because they are impatiens. They're hybrid impatiens that perhaps our listeners may have had trouble with their impatiens in the last couple of years, because there's a relatively new disease called downy mildew that has been wiping out the traditional impatiens, which had been the number one seed crop in the nation. And now all of a sudden, almost all of them are getting wiped out by this disease. So there is a hybrid between the New Guinea impatiens and the regular, I'll call it regular, impatiens walleriana, that is the one that most people grow in the shade. And these often have sun tolerance as well as shade tolerance. So there is one new Sun Patience is a brand name called Spreading Shell Pink that fits in that category, that has the great disease resistance, nice large flowers, and will tolerate sun as well as shade. The other one that is a plant winner is the Bounce Pink Flame, which also it's not in the Sun Patience series, but it's the same sort of hybrid between the New Guinea impatiens and the impatiens walleriana.
So let me ask you, and Richard, I'd love for you to weigh in on this, but first let me ask you, when we see these winners from All America Selections, are they going to be readily available in the spring, or do we need to wait a couple of years before they're going to be easy to get?
That's a good question. Some of these are going to be kind of hard this year, I think. I've been looking through the catalogs and on the internet, and I can find some, but not others. So this year, it might be kind of hard. The companies that did submit the seeds, they did promise they would have them available, but just because of the lag in production, there may be some where you can't find the seeds for this year.
Okay.
Yeah, you might have to be a little persistent in finding out the supplier that's carrying it this year rather than the dozens of suppliers that are carrying it.
And I know a lot of people, probably you included, Richard, are going to be very excited to hear about new strains of impatience that they can plant. I wonder, though, so many of us got so dependent on impatience because they were so easy to grow and would stay beautiful for so long. Is that part of the problem? Did we overplant?
I don't think so. We just had a new disease, basically, that was spread to the country. And these plants simply have no resistance to that disease, kind of like the ash trees and the emerald ash borer. When you have a introduced pest, the plants have no resistance to it, and it just wipes them out, and it's unfortunate. That's why it's nice to have these newer varieties that have resistance to downy mildew. And there are some seed-grown ones, too, for example, in the catalogs, like the Divine series and the Florific series, where you can actually buy seed. These are New Guinea impatiens, and they are downy mildew resistant. So you have that option. You have seeds, and also now you have plants from cuttings.
So it's okay to plant impatience as much as you want? if you get the ones that are the right kind, yes. All right. I was just wondering if we were overdoing it in the past, if there was a danger of overdoing it in the future.
We probably did overdo it, but again, it was an introduced pest that really the plants had no resistance to it, unfortunately.
Now, Denny, you talked about the preponderance of peppers, which we could just say all hour. But what are some of the other trends you see on the list?
Well, as we noted, the lots of peppers. I think there are some new trends as far as greens in vegetables. So it's been many years since there was a lettuce winner. And I think greens are one thing that people are looking at. So the lettuce sandy is an oak leaf type lettuce that is a winner this year. I find lettuce pretty easy to grow, and maybe we don't need a new lettuce variety because there are dozens of them out there. But I always like to try the new ones to see if it may hold up a little bit better. This one supposedly has a little bit better resistance to the bolting and forming seeds or turning bitter in the summer. So unless we have a really, really hot, dry, droughty summer, you may be able to grow this sandy lettuce all season long. Another one that's a interesting one is we don't often see herb winners, and there is an herb winner this year, a basil dolce fresca, which again has a longer harvest period than some of the other basils. You know, basils tend to go to seed very, very quickly, and this is one that if you keep cutting it back, it should produce all season long. Another little trend I see is that small size. People are wanting to grow things in smaller spaces. They don't have as big a garden. So the one squash this year, butterscotch, is a butternut type squash that is much smaller fruited than normal.
Yeah, they're adorable.
They are. And after having grown my regular Waltham butternuts this year and having these 14-pound fruits that I eat for an entire week.
It seems really attractive. But
it seems nice to have a little one that may only be one or two meals.
And I also noticed that there's a bok choy that is the first ever in the history to become an AAS winner?
That's right. The bok choy Bopak is the first one that ever has done that. There was another regional winner, Brussels sprouts, that has not been around for a long time. So I think, some of these, like I said, healthy greens are something that people are looking at.
And they have one tomato on the list. And of course, everybody is always looking for the perfect tomato. Is this a big deal when they pick a tomato?
Well, actually, last year there was a, shall I say, sister plant that was a winner. This year's winner is tomato Chef's Choice Pink. Last year, the winner was Chef's Choice Orange.
Oh, okay. And this one is regional. It says Southeast and Great Lakes, so
right,
that's so not us.
Yeah, well, we
or can we be included in the Great Lakes?
Certainly the eastern part of the state would be included in that Great Lakes category.
Okay.
We're kind of in that transition zone between Great Lakes and Heartland.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. We've been talking about the All-America selections. You can find the 2015 list online. Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock is here today along with Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Call in with your questions, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. You can join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post a question on our Facebook page. And if you go to our Facebook page, you can find a link to the 2015 list of All-America Selections winners. So if you wanted to look through that list for yourself, you can do that there. Let's start with a phone call. This one is from Tom in Cumming. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I have a question regarding clematis. Is it best to take down the dead foliage in the fall or in the spring? And also, regarding fertilizing, is it better to fertilize in the fall or the spring? And I'll take the response offline. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay, as far as pruning, I would say I would do that in early spring, and I say that because there are three different types. There are those that bloom strictly on new growth, those that bloom strictly on old growth, and those that bloom on both old and new wood. So what I would suggest is waiting till spring until the vine begins to leaf out and then cut out all the dead wood. Now, if you know it's a variety that blooms strictly on new wood, then I would cut it back to within like maybe a foot of the ground in the spring.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot for your call. We've got a couple lines open for your questions at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And as far as cutting things back, I mean, we talked about getting the garden and the yard ready for winter. Let's say you didn't do it. Are there still things you should be doing out there, or should we just leave it?
Actually, in most cases, it's not a problem to leave the foliage of plants intact through the winter. The exception would be is if they showed disease or insect problems this year, it's good to get those cleared out and away from the garden so you're not overwintering the problem. In some cases, it may actually be an advantage to leave the foliage intact in that it tends to trap the snow and create a little bit more insulation and less damage to perennials over winter.
All right. So you can still get out there and do some work.
Right. Especially since the long range forecast is showing nice, nice weather this next week. So this weekend and next weekend might be a good time to do some more cutback if you really don't like the look of the dead plants out there.
All right. And people do get kind of excited about plants going dormant, particularly trees going dormant, so they can get some pruning done. With the warm-up, is it time to do that, or should we wait? What do you think, Richard?
Well, as far as pruning, if you have oak trees, we like to prune those basically in the winter, so December, January, and February. As far as most of our fruit trees and ornamental trees, I would be inclined to wait myself and maybe do it in March.
All right.
Be a good time.
Okay, wait for March.
Yeah.
What about oak trees?
Oak trees, definitely, you can do that anytime now through basically January and February into March, early March.
All right. So you can get out there, and you should get out there, right?
On the oak trees, yes.
You don't want it to be March and be pushing the envelope.
Right.
And what are the dangers if you wait too long?
Well, the danger is that there's a disease spread by an insect, oak wilt, and it's spread by a small sap beetle. And during the growing season, that beetle obviously is very active. And it may carry the disease to a pruning cut that you make on an oak tree. Now, obviously, if you prune in the wintertime, the insect is not out there, no problem at all.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post on our Facebook page. And this is the time of year when we start to see the seed catalogs arrive in our mailboxes, which makes for a lot of fun browsing. I would love to hear from the two of you how you organize this process in your life, because there are so many seed catalogs, and I'm sure you guys get all of them. How do you decide who you're going to order from? And you don't need to make recommendations, but how do you organize it for yourself?
Well, they typically start arriving around the end of November. And what I simply do is glance at them as they arrive and see if I see something that strikes my eye, see if I have interest in that, and kind of make a note of it mentally, and then look through them all, and basically at the end, maybe around January, mid-January, decide what I want. So that's basically what I do.
Denny?
Yes, the way I do it is when they come, and of course I'm excited to see it, so as I browse through the catalogs, I circle things that I'm interested in and kind of set it aside. Once most all of the catalogs have arrived, I'll go back through and say, okay, this company has 5 that I really want. This one has 3. Oh, but this one also carries over there. So there's really only 2 I can't get from this company. So I kind of bunch my orders so I don't have so many shipping charges. I also always pay close attention to ones that I think are reputable and make sure they have good quality, because sometimes the what sounds too good to be true probably is. And for our listeners who are wondering, how do you know if a company is reputable, other than on your own experience or experience of friends who've ordered from a company, a good place to check is to go online to Dave's Garden. It's a little bit like the Angie's List of garden supplies and plants. It's just davesgarden.com. And they have a list of several thousand different mail order gardening companies that consumers have rated their experience with them. So I know that XYZ company, well, I know from my experience it may not be good, but I can also see there are 14 less than stellar ratings on Dave's Garden, so I probably want to avoid that company.
Okay, that's great advice. I was just going to ask you, how do you know? How do you know if something's reputable or not? And do you have concerns about making your order in time to make sure you get the seeds that you want? Is there a time when people start running out?
I would say you want to have that in your order in by the end of January, because many of the companies, many of the big companies like, for example, Harris Seed and Stoke Seeds, they sell to both homeowners and commercial growers. And they get extremely busy once you get into basically February and March. So if you can get those in by the end of January, you should get what you want and very quickly.
All right. Let's go to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Doug is on the line in Ames. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Charity.
Hi. What's your question?
It's more of a general tree pruning question. I caught the tail end of the oak discussion. And the question I've got, we've got about 16 mature trees on the north side of Ames. And we prune pretty aggressively in the dormant season. But I've always wondered about putting on the tree wound cover. You know, years ago, we used pine tar back in Pennsylvania. And I've always wondered, is there a benefit to that, or should you just leave it open? I always tell my kids never to put a Band-Aid on anything if you can avoid it. So I'll hang up and listen to your reply. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Doug. So that seems to be a perennial question.
Yeah.
Do you dress the wound or not?
It was a very common practice maybe 15, 20 years ago to do this, put on a pruning paint or wound dressings. But research has found they don't do any good. So basically we say just make a nice, clean, proper cut and leave it at that.
Okay.
There are certain exceptions that actually, as you said, they don't do any good, and sometimes they may be actually harmful, because as that wound dressing dries out, it can crack and cause moisture to seep in behind and actually promote rot. So the only exception you would do it is, as we talked on something like the oak tree, if you had storm damage and need to make a pruning cut during the growing season, it's better to take that chance of maybe getting that rotten limb than to get the chance of dying of oak wilt. So if you prune a disease-prone tree during the growing season, maybe use wound dressing then.
Okay, and if you want to, if you feel that you need to use wound dressing, what do you use?
Actually, if you're pruning an oak tree, let's say in June or July, we would just say if you have a house latex paint, a nice gray or brown, use that. Don't use that tarry material, use latex paint.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send your questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have an email question. I inherited a garden from the previous owners of my home. I did not clean it up this fall. I didn't know what to do with it. What's the best way to get it ready for next spring?
Well, not knowing what the plants are, it's kind of hard to say what all should be done. So maybe because it really doesn't matter unless there were disease problems, leave the things in place. Then next late winter, start looking in late March, early April. Take note of what's beginning to grow. Most perennials will start bubbling up from the ground at that point, and that's a good time then to cut back all the dead material to the ground. If there are ones that don't die back completely, then you know exactly when the new or where the new growth is starting, so you can cut back to the live tissue and remove any damaged parts.
All right. And do you have a favorite resource? I'm guessing this is a person who could use some basic gardening information and advice. Do you have a favorite resource other than Extension publications, which are great, but for beginners to kind of get an overview?
Well, perhaps I can do a little somewhat self-promotion. When I was a garden book editor with Meredith, I worked on a number of books, and one of them that I think is a great all-time resource is one that's called The Miracle-Gro Plant Encyclopedia of Plant Care. We covered thousands of different plants in there and how to take care of them.
All right, let's go to the phones. Next up, we have Jill on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Jill.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, what's your question?
Great. I found at the new bookshelf at the library a book by Caleb Warnock called Backyard Winter Gardening, which describes hotbed planting even in January in cold areas using an approach with manure or green matter deeply kind of underneath the roots, and then you put soil, and you can plant a lot of things after the solstice that just pretty much you don't hear about normally, even in areas a little south of us. So I'm wondering, because this author teaches about this in Utah, if you know of anybody I could turn to for further advice for doing a hotbed approach in Iowa?
I'm not aware of anyone who is actively working with hotbeds here in Iowa. There probably are some people out there that are doing so. You can do a lot even in other types of things, like even with just cold frames. An author that I know who gardens in Maine, Nikki Jabour, does year-round gardening in Maine with just cold frames. She's not even using hotbeds. So as long as you are sticking with some of the cool season crops like spinaches and the lettuce and arugula and things like that, you can pretty much grow those through winter. I've even overwintered spinach under just floating row covers here in Iowa.
Yeah, we have our chard and kale that way. I might try this book's approach for, they even are doing tomato and cantaloupe posting or post-solstice planting, which just shocked me, and all through the winter. He's got stuff. So anyway, thank you so much.
Yeah, well, and Jill, if it works out, you let us know in the spring, all right?
Yeah.
You may be one of the first in Iowa doing it.
Yeah, I would be very surprised with success on tomatoes and the hot season crops like this, because they usually are dislike any temperatures below about 45 degrees. And I would think it would be difficult to maintain warmer than that in those hotbeds.
All right, Jill, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your questions. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at IPR Talk. Next up, Francis is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Francis.
Good morning. I have a question. Have you ever experienced any with a tomato plant called Celebration?
That's a very common variety.
Is it a very common variety?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my wife won a plant, tomato plant, one of the garden shows, and I chose Celebration, and I thought it was kind of an early tomato plant, but it had beautiful fruit on it when it was going, and it lasted real well in regards to, I've been a big fan of Better Boy and Big Boy, and it almost outdid those two. So I just wondered if you'd heard very many people plant that.
Well, there are, I would say, probably hundreds, if not thousands, of different tomato varieties. There are the old heirloom varieties that have some really unusual names, very distinctive names, and then you have the modern hybrid. So there are many, many varieties out there. It's amazing how many there are, actually.
Yes, there are. We've got some of those purple tomatoes sitting on the counter right now.
There's a seed catalog called Totally Tomatoes. So if you're into tomatoes, they have many, many different varieties.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. And Francis, thank you so much
thank
for
you
your
too.
Call.
Thanks.
As you guys go through your seed catalogs, one of the big problems that my husband and I have every year is, and we're not good gardeners, we try, but we always overbuy because we get so excited about it. How do you keep yourself in check, or do you ever learn how to do that?
Well, one thing that I do, Charity, is I file my seeds and keep the excess in the garage refrigerator. So I file them by starting date or planting date. And at this time of year, I kind of go through and do a little inventory. Say, okay, this is what I've got left. And these are the things I would like more of. So I try to calm myself down and say, all right, you already have 24 tomato seed packets. You don't need to order any more.
No, a lot of us who order too many seeds then do save them for the next year.
Right.
What are some of the concerns about the germination of those seeds?
Most seeds you can store, if you store them in a cool, dry place, I typically just put them in a cupboard where they're nice and dry. They're not extremely hot or anything like that, but make sure they don't get moist or wet. They need to be completely dry. So I just put them in a cupboard. I just flip over the end so they don't fall out, and just store them in the cupboard. If you do that, most things like, for example, tomato seed, a pepper seed, they will germinate well probably for 3 or 4 years. If you have very fine seed, for example, maybe, let's say, impatiens or petunias, if they're not pelleted, because they are very fine, they tend not to live as long, maybe a couple years on those. So it kind of depends upon the type of plant, but in many cases, 2 or 3 years is very doable.
And, Denny, you mentioned your garage refrigerator. Is that a refrigerator entirely devoted to plants?
It's not entirely devoted to plants. That's where I keep my Chardonnay and my I use it as a sort of a root cellar storage area. So my onions and carrots and some of those types of things are in that refrigerator as well. And that's where I keep my supply of Diet Mountain Dew. So a good way to keep things from getting too moist, because sometimes moisture can be a problem in a refrigerator, is you can put things in little Tupperware containers, or I sometimes use small jelly canning jars and seal them down a little bit so the moisture doesn't fluctuate. That's a real big problem with seeds, is that fluctuation in moisture too. So it's not just high or low, but the fluctuation. So a combination of cold temperatures and low humidity are great. If you have some of the little silica gel drying packets that come with shoes or other packing materials, great to put that in with your seeds for storage.
All right, great tip. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We got an email from John in Ames who says, please repeat the URL for the garden supplier reviews. That was davesgarden.com.
Correct.
All right. Davesgarden.com, kind of the Angie's List of gardening reviews. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back to answer more of your questions in a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, ISU Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran and Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And of course, during the growing season, our lines are always jammed with questions about something going on right now. If you want to talk bigger picture gardening questions or plant questions, landscape questions, now is a great time to do that. You have the time. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran. And this is a message from Christina. Help, we struggle with tomato blight every year. We always remove the affected leaves. Affected leaves during the growing season and do not put them in the compost. What can we do now to prevent it next year? Remove all the plants? Anything else?
Well, basically, there are a number of things that you can do, and they help. They're not a guarantee, but they do help. And the first one is sanitation. Clean up that dead debris. Remove it from the area and destroy it. Don't put it in the compost pile. Get rid of it. The next thing is to look for a different site, and ideally a site where you haven't grown tomatoes for 3 years or longer. Now, that's difficult if you have a small garden, but you want to try to do that as best you can, because the pathogen will persist in the tiny bits of plant debris in the soil, so you want to rotate. When you plant...
And how far away?
As far away as you can get.
Okay.
You know, 10 feet is not very much. 50 feet would be great, okay?
Unrealistic for a lot of people, but
yeah. I know. But also consider the fact that you can put tomatoes in non-traditional areas, like a flower bed, for example. If you have an open space, you can put a tomato plant there, no problem. So you want to rotate as best you can. Now, in a traditional garden setting, when you plant those, make sure they're spaced out, because you want them to dry out after a rain, so space them out nicely. Don't overcrowd them. And then either grow them in a cage where they're up off the ground, or stake them so that, again, they dry out nicely after a rain. And if all else fails, you can use a fungicide beginning at the very first sign of symptoms on the plant.
All right. And you mentioned planting tomatoes in non-traditional places. What about container gardening? Is that a good idea if you just
Sure.
can't beat this problem?
Sure, you can do that too, where you use potting soil and a big old pot. You could use like a 5-gallon bucket. Just make sure you have some holes in the bottom, drill some holes in the bottom, And I would probably use the determinate varieties that don't get huge in a large bucket or large container, and they should do fine.
The number to call with your question, 866-780-9100. This is a question from Elizabeth in Iowa City. What is the best flowering plant to give as a gift, specifically for someone lacking a green thumb?
Well, I would say, you know, it depends on the occasion or whatever, but, you know, one of the longest lasting plants as a blooming plant is the chrysanthemum. You know, that may be too common and it's throughout the fall months, but it really is a great long lasting one. Now, I also like to go with some other types of things, like the Kalanchoe is really a nice long lasting one and actually fairly easy to get to rebloom again. So it's a nice succulent, easy to care. You can not have to water it very frequently. So those are a couple that would be really long lasting.
Richard, do you want to add anything?
I would add the cyclamen. Now, the cyclamen needs a cool place, and you need to check it fairly frequently as far as watering needs. But if you do that and give it bright light in a cool environment, it may bloom for 2 or 3 months. Very nice.
All right. And I have to say, I think an amaryllis is a great thing, too, just because you
yes.
almost can't fail. And then when you eventually kill it, if you don't have a green thumb, it's okay, right?
it's okay, yeah, I guess.
All right. Jeff is on the line next in Maquoketa. Hi, Jeff.
Hello. I have two questions about tree trimming. I have one youngish, middle-aged, about 30-year-old willow, and an older, like 50- or 60-year-old maple. And I'm wondering, do you need to trim those during colder weather so that, because of insects, like you said, with the oaks, or should they be trimmed in summertime? And also, I need to know how high up the tree trimming totem pole should you go for expertise trimming and not someone who's going to wind up killing the tree. We have tree trimmers, but and people who remove trees, but you need to go to someone with more education like you or a forester, or who's recommended?
Well, as far as pruning a tree, for the most part, you can prune a tree almost any time during the year. You're not going to kill it, okay? We tend to avoid or recommend you don't prune as the trees are leafing out in the spring, okay, and in the fall when they're basically shedding their leaves. But in reality, you can prune almost any time during the year. The exception would be the oaks, which we prefer doing in the wintertime, basically December, January, February. As far as having it done by someone, what I would do probably is start by looking in the phone book, if you have a phone book, and look for someone that has experience, or they've been in the business for 15, 20, 25 years. Look to see if they belong to any professional organizations, like the Iowa Arborist Association or the International Arboriculture Society, because they have certain standards that their members adhere to. You don't want somebody simply with a truck and a chainsaw. You want somebody that's knowledgeable. And that's a good way to start, is looking for their experience and if they belong to a professional organization.
Okay, because that's what we had before, and it wasn't very long, and I was having another one come to remove the tree. So,
And when you do contact these tree care people, get at least 2 or 3 estimates, because they can vary quite a bit as far as cost. And if you can be there when they come,
yes,
that's a good opportunity to ask some questions of them. And sometimes they'll say things that you know are not correct, which helps a great deal. So you can talk to them, get some idea of their knowledge. If they say certain inappropriate words like topping, or for example, that's not a good word to say, then you have some doubts on that person or company.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Jeff. Next up, let's go to Sarah in Waverly. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. I have a question about propagating lemon trees. My husband's grandma planted a lemon tree in 1940 in California. When she moved out of her house, my husband brought home a couple of lemons. And I planted the seeds, and I got a lemon tree. It now produces about 3 or 4 lemons a year, but I can't get anything to grow from those seeds. And I don't know what I did right the first time, and I don't know what I'm doing wrong now.
That is a little unusual because citrus trees, including lemons, typically produce parthenocarpic seed. That is, that they don't actually need to be pollinated to produce the seed. So I don't know why yours is not germinating, but it might help to actually try to get some lemon pollen and use your flowers and make sure they do get a viable embryo in that seed. But usually they produce viable embryos without that.
Yeah, I've had them. It says that they need to go directly into the soil instead of, you know, you can't let them dry out. So I put them directly in the soil, and I've done that, and I've tried to keep them warm. So it said warm soil is kind of important. And I don't know if it's just a time of year thing. I mean, I've got six little pots lined up on my countertop in the warmest place in the house, and nothing's going. So I just thought you might have some insight.
Now, the seeds are from fully ripe fruits, is that right? I mean, that would be the other thing. So, yeah, as long as the fruit is ripe, you pull the seeds out and sow them directly and keep the potting medium moist but not soggy. You don't want them to rot away either. I don't know for sure why you wouldn't be having success.
Okay, well, I'll just keep trying then. Thank you.
All right, good luck, Sarah. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Ruth on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Ruth.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have a question about a forsythia bush, which is now a small tree. It's about 8 feet tall, and it has branched out quite a bit at the top, but it's just too tall. Can I lop that off at the top to bring it to about 6 feet, or will I just have sort of twigs?
Okay. Well, first you should keep in mind that if you are pruning your forsythia now, you're pruning off the flowers for next spring. So if you want to prune it back to 6 feet, it's just going to sprout back out. It has a genetic potential to grow to that 8 feet, and it's going to want to grow. So it will grow back to that size. If you really need a smaller shrub in that location, for a long-term solution, would be best to actually replace it with a smaller shrub. And there are some forsythias that are dwarf that would only get 3, 4, or 5 feet tall. So you might want to consider a replacement like that. You can cut this back, and it would grow back up to 8 feet every few years. But every time you cut it back, it's going to reduce the flowering that following year.
Okay. So if I leave it that tall, can I bring it in to be a little narrower? Or
you certainly can cut along the sides, so because the forsythia does tend to have a very arching sort of growth habit. So if you want to cut the sides back a little bit, the other thing to think about would be, you know, shortly after the first of the year, you could cut those branches off, cut them back a couple of feet, bring them in, enjoy the flowers inside, and then the rest of the shrub would flower next spring. So you might think about that as an option as well.
Okay. All right. I guess I'll just leave the top on there for now. Thank you.
All right, Ruth. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we have Terry on the line in Illinois. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a raised strawberry bed. It's about 2 feet high. And it's got a base of manure, then, of course, dirt on top of it. And it did pretty good this past year. And I'm wondering do I trim off all those leaves and then use straw on it for the winter, or do I leave the leaves on it?
Leave the leaves on the plants. Don't cut it back at this point, but definitely cover the plants with some straw. Put on 3 to 5 inches of straw, nice, clean straw. Leaves tend to mat down, so they don't really provide very good protection. So use something that's loose and airy, like nice, clean straw, and put on 3 to 5 inches as soon as possible.
And the other thing you might want to keep in mind, because it's a raised bed, it's going to be more exposed to wind. So even though you get the straw on, the wind might blow it away. So you might even consider topping that off with a floating row cover to keep the straw in place, or at least something that would keep the straw in place so it doesn't blow away.
All right, great. Next up, we've got Hank on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Hank.
Hello.
What's your question?
Yeah. Well, I had a bag of peat moss. I went and bought some blueberry bushes, and I had about a half a bag left over. And one of my little helpers decided to put it out of my garden for me last year. And I was wondering, I had it all tilled in now. What can I plant that's going to take the acidity in that soil?
Okay, so you have too much peat moss in the garden.
Yeah, way too much.
Okay. I wouldn't think that would be a problem, really, for the most part. Peat moss is acidic, but most Iowa soils are fairly high as far as pH, so adding it's probably not going to make it too low. So I would think it would be fine, just kind of work it in thoroughly, the peat moss, and I would think anything could be planted in the area.
Yeah, unless you've added, you know, like 6 inches of peat moss through the whole garden, you're probably not really going to affect the pH of the soil of that garden significantly at all.
Hmm. Well, that's good news.
All right, good.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Hank. Next up, Carol is on the line in Ryan. Hi, Carol.
Hi, thanks for taking this call. I have two maple trees in the back. They're gorgeous. They're pretty good size. They're probably about 20 years old. And someone told me they should be thin because the branches are too tight. Have you heard of that?
Well, some maples do tend to branch very freely, particularly silver maples send out a lot of branches. Unless they have a weak branch structure, however, you don't really need to thin them out. So it's more a matter of the structure of the tree. Most of the maples don't suffer from foliar disease problems that would need thinning so that they can dry the foliage faster. So okay, probably don't need thinning.
Good. I know that even in a strong windstorm, they lose very few branches. My other question is, I would like to plant some smallish evergreens that are like not very dense because I just want to diffuse the light that bounces off the white houses nearby because it's blinding in the summer. And don't have a lot of space. I'm wondering what type, perhaps a pine or...
Well, if you don't have a lot of space, I guess I would look at the arborvitae. Because they tend to be very columnar, and some of those may only get to be 3 or 4 feet wide, some even smaller than that. But your big trees like your Norway spruce, your white pine, they can get to be 25, 30 feet wide, maybe 30, 40, 50 feet tall. So if you have limited space, I would look at the arborvitae as a possibility. They're very common. Another possibility as far as a shrub would be the yews. They're very common too, but they're much smaller in size compared to a pine or spruce. Now, you do have a lot of dwarf conifers, and they can be very small, but they're kind of hard to find and kind of pricey. So,
there also would be some of the columnar junipers. There's like a skyrocket juniper that stays pretty tight. You don't want that one that will spread a long ways, but there are some columnar junipers, so I don't know how high or tall this needs to be, but they don't get very wide.
All right, Carol, thanks a lot for your call. Probably don't paint the neighbors' houses. I think you're taking the right approach. And let's slip in the final question. This is from Ryan and Reasoner. We're building a new house this winter. We're on heavy clay soils, but we did not have the topsoil removed. Any advice moving forward when we begin to landscape?
I would try to find some good topsoil if possible. And if not that, if they live near a large urban center, I would assume they would have a composting facility, and I would try to buy some truckloads of compost and bring it to the site, dump it, and incorporate it into the existing soil.
All right, and do it now before you have a lawn, and it's a lot harder.
Right. Once you plant things, you're kind of stuck with what you've got. So you want to do that before you plant.
Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron, Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock, thank you.
You're very welcome. Great to be here.
And with me in the studio is Ben Kiefer, host of River to River. What's coming up on the show today, Ben?
Oh, we've got about a half dozen topics to cover in our News Buzz edition. Among them, we know President Obama wants to make money available for body cameras for police forces around the country. We'll talk with Officer Mario Coleman of the Clive Police Department. Now, they've been using body cameras for a year. We'll talk about how that changes policing with body cameras. That's one of the many topics, Charity.
All right, River to River today at noon on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.